For more information on Ancient Dragon Zen Gate, please visit our website at www.ancientdragon.org. Our teachings are offered to the community through the generosity of our supporters. To make a donation online, please visit our website.
Welcome, Bodhisattvas, near and far. Without much ado, I would like to thank Douglas for offering the talk this morning and for offering to offer the talk. And you know, I hesitate to introduce people that we know so well and say a lot about them, but some people are relatively new to the situation or haven't been around for a little while. So Douglas is a temple pillar of Ancient Dragon, having done so much to support us and continuing to do that. Lay Dharma transmitted practitioner. And he and Aishin form this practice unit called Tanto. So they make even a bigger pillar, you know, which creates the forms and settles us into the depth of practice. So so Douglas is also Tanto. You know, sometimes we say co-Tantos, but I think Tanto is the position that we've poured two people into, and it's really wonderful. But Douglas also has a special interest in koan practice, these old teaching stories, and I think you're going to share that with us.
I am.
And please feel welcome to add anything you'd like. So I just want to sing your praises, so thank you very much.
Well, I don't want people to sing my praises because then he creates this view and inherently deluded, which gives rise to afflictive emotions as I give my Dharma talk and I don't live up to what you're expecting and hoping for. You know, Dharma talks are really challenging because they follow this period of Zazen where we find Zen practice in its purest form. It's Zen neat. The opportunity to sit and alternate between this mind that's sort of self-enclosed, caught up in thinking and desires and emotions on the one hand, and then these moments of opening up to just sitting here on the cushion. Feeling of clarity and just being here. I don't know. I my feeling is that Buddhist thought is largely commentary, attempts to either explain or to evoke at the mind of awakening and what the mind experiences in awakening. So we could either sit Zazen or we could read a scripture if you'd like. But, you know, Suzuki Roshi used to talk about this closed-in mind, our confused mind, which is the mind that's caught up in the thinking and emotions and desires. It's the dualistic mind, deluded mind. He used to call it small mind, which gave you a sense of small self. And by small mind, he also used to say that small mind is the mind that's always related to something else. And that's right, obviously. I mean, the traditional Buddhist teaching would say that what happens to us with our usual mind, our deluded mind, is that a number of things happen at once. Our mind fixes on some object of of perception or that we conceive of. And at the same time, once we have done that, our conditioning immediately brings up to into action our memories and experiences, everything we know about this kind of object and what we think it is, what we would like it to be, how it should be. And then in relation to that, we come up with the afflictive emotions of desire and from that comes the mind, there comes suffering. And I think you see what Suzuki Roshi was talking about with mind that's always related to something. We get caught up in our thinking and feeling and desire, and we're always, I'm thinking of that, I desire that, I don't like that. So there's the separation, the dualism. Suzuki Roshi liked to talk about dualism a lot. So there's the dualism of this and that, me and that, me and the world, good or bad, like, dislike, right, wrong. There's an overlay that we place upon the world that we experience. And that's how we create the world of suffering for ourselves. The alternative world that he talks about in small self then is that self that sees, desires, wants, doesn't want, likes, doesn't like, that is angry or afraid, that's feeling vulnerable, insecure. That's the self, and from that sense of the self, everything else unfolds. That sense of, okay, the world is always a problem. We're always insecure. We come to everything with a sense of we like, we don't like, we hope, we dread. You know, we don't like what we have, or we want it to change, or we don't want it to change. There's always that stress. The alternative mind, the mind that we experience during Zazen all the time, is when we step back from that. And we step, not that we stop that kind of thinking and desire and emotion. We don't get turned into rocks or trees. We are people. But our awareness opens up so that all of those mental operations become part of what's here. We open up to a world that consists of all of our, everything around us, the everything we can perceive, and our bodies and the minds with that thinking and desire and emotion, all of that. And so while we continue to have desires and emotions and hopes and fears and so on, they're not in control. They're there, but they are not in control. Chogyam Trungpa Rinpoche used to say, well, when that happens, things become workable. You're not caught up in desire and aversion and fear. Suzuki Roshi used to talk about, I think, to give a feel for that, big mind, as he would say, big mind is the mind that includes everything. So big mind is awareness that isn't restricted to that claustrophobic sense of I'm really preoccupied with being me, trying to deal with that thing out there that I like or don't like, that I'm afraid of, that I hate, that I'm angry at. It's instead this the mind that is present in the entire field of awareness and beyond that. So it's this big, open, spacious mind. And so the mind that includes everything. And to sort of make it more concrete, It's the mind that is always a part of its surroundings. That mind that we're sitting in Zazen, somehow we take this backward step from our thinking and feeling that we've been caught up in, and there we are, we're part of the surroundings, we're right here, we're aware of the room, the other people we're sitting with, we're aware of ourselves as part of this situation. Big mind, awakened mind. That's the mind where we've let go. Dogen tells us in Fukan Zazengi that we let go of like, dislike, good, bad, right, wrong, judgments, and all these mental operations by taking the backward step. And where we, thinking becomes beyond thinking. Thinking becomes non-thinking. And at that moment, our original face, Buddha nature, appears. And we take our place in it. So we sit completely caught up, and suddenly we're here in this awareness that is there at all times. It's the most fundamental awareness of our mind. It's there when we're deluded. It's there when we're awake. When we're deluded, we are distracted from it because we are focusing on, we're grasping some object of perception, some object we've conceived of, and we're caught up in feeling about it, thinking about it. And so we are deluded because we are actively ignoring this reality that we are here in this moment. But this is, it's not just some sort of vision, some sort of mystical vision of unity with the world. It is being, taking your place in that world, and living in that world and responding in this world to the requirements of this situation in which we find ourselves in. And I have loved what Adam Litchfield has said one time about his former teacher, Kyoki Roberts, that she would always enter a room and the first thing she would say is, what needs to be done? And that is big mind. Is being awake to this situation and responding to this situation. So, you know, one of the tools is for clarifying what's involved in big mind and how to live with big mind is koan practice. I'm not a great expert on koan practices. It's practiced at least in Rinzai teaching or Sambo Kyodan teaching. I did koan practice with a Sambo Kyodan teacher for 10 years. But I think it's fair to say that I am more at home with the Soto version that says that we read the koans, we try to approach the koans as expressions of awakened mind. And unlike some parts of Zen, I don't find it necessary to have some sort of blinding moment of universe-shaking clarity to understand koans. I think we can approach them, but we approach them through big mind. That in reading the koans, coming to them with big mind, with Zazen mind, we can have moments of recognition of that's what's going on in this moment. That's right here. And so I wanted to share one today, and hopefully I don't think it'll take too much time, and I'm going to force you to be interactive. This one is called Yangguan's Rhinoceros Fan. It's a Case 25 from the Book of Serenity. It's also in the Blue Cliff Record. And you can always assume that if a koan story is included in two or three of the great koan collections, maybe it's worth paying attention to. So this one begins with Yuanwu's traditional introduction. Oceans of lands without bound are not apart from right here. the events of infinite eons past are all in the immediate present. Try to make him present it face to face, and he won't be able to bring it out in the wind. But tell me, where is the fault? In the story, the case itself is. One day, Yang Guang called to his attendant, "Bring me the rhinoceros fan." The attendant said, the fan's broken. And Yang Guang said, "Well, if the fan is broken, then bring me back the rhinoceros." The attendant had no reply. What a shock. Some years later, Zifu drew a circle and wrote the word ox inside it. So, there's moral. There's plenty of commentary, another poem, commentary on the poem. There are marginal notes from subsequent Zen teachers from long time afterward that were included alongside parts of the story, parts of the commentary. And then on top of that, Guan Wu comes back and comments on the comments, sort of the Zen thing, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. It's kind of like Talmud. Mm-hmm. You have the text of Talmud and then different rabbis have their different commentary and they're responding to each other and it's all collected on the page. That's how the koan collections work. At least that's how the Book of Serenity and the Blue Cliff Record work. So the verse here is, as the fan is broken, he seeks the rhino. The word in the circle has a reason. Who would have known the thousand-year darkness of the new moon would subtly make a pervasive, luminous spot of autumn sun. So this, two things are helpful and absolutely necessary to make sense of this story. One is, what is a rhinoceros fan? Mm-hmm. And nobody exactly knows, even back then, when compiled this collection. There's a collection of koans that Hongshi Zhongshui put together. But Yuan Wu then added commentary in his own introduction and then added all the comments of the subsequent Zen teachers and his comments on top of those. So Yuan Wu is clear, well, that a rhinoceros fan, it could be a fan that has a painting of a rhinoceros on it, or it could be a fan with ribs made of a carved rhinoceros tusk horn, or it could be a fan that has a handle that's made out of polished and carved rhinoceros horn. He says he doesn't know, but most of the commentators in the past must have seen fans like this because they tend to talk about the handle. So the fan has been broken. I think we'd probably say that the handle is broken off. And it's good to know that even back in the 12th century and the 10th century from which this story would take place, the rhinoceros was almost extinct in China. So, and rhinoceros horn has near magical properties, it's great medicinal properties. So a rhinoceros horn handle on a fan would make it a very precious item indeed. Another thing to know is that the characters used in the koan to refer to the rhinoceros characters, Xin Yu, which combines a character sheep, which by itself can mean rhinoceros, and then Yu is a word which means either bull or ox. So you could say that Yang Guan is asking for the rhinoceros bull fan. The significance of that, of the fact of this word, is that, and later in the commentaries, even Yuan Wu's commentaries, he just uses the word, the character for ox. And the significance of this is that in Zen literature and poems and in paintings, an ox is a symbol for awakened mind and fundamental reality. So, fine, we can be as literal as we want to and say, you know, it's, I think the most useful way to approach koans is to imagine yourself in the position of the different characters, usually a student and a teacher. So we imagine this student is a Yangguan's attendant, who's usually a young monk who hasn't received full ordination. Yangguan at this time was a very old man, very well-known, great Zen teacher. So a person of great authority in this, this attendant monk has the, you know, he's in awe. He wants approval. And his job is to not just be a gopher for the teacher, but to anticipate the teacher's needs. So when the teacher gets up in the morning, the tea is supposed to be ready. If guests come, he's supposed to have the treats ready to serve the guests when they're meeting with the teacher, and so on. So this young monk has been told by the teacher, bring me that rhinoceros fan. And he's going, oh my God, I can't, what am I supposed to do? It's broken. And think of the fact that it's broken, and he's the guy who's supposed to be taking care of the teacher's things, and he hasn't repaired the fan. So he's facing what he would see as a strong likelihood of criticism, at the very least, embarrassment and shame, and he just freezes.
Sorry.
So he just freezes. There's nothing there. And you can imagine Yangguan just sitting there. And finally, taking pity on the poor attendant, says, okay, if the fan's broken, bring me the rhinoceros. So the attendant would have understood by the rhinoceros has this metaphorical meaning of awakened mind and ultimate reality. So Yangguan is saying, okay, wake up. Come back right here. Demonstrate your awakened mind. Respond to this situation. So the attendant does nothing. He can't respond at all. So, you know, Zifu, the subsequent later teacher who is described in the body of the koans, created a circle, the enso, the symbol of emptiness, ultimate reality, and so on. And he writes ox in it. I mean, it's metonymy. He's referring to the rhinoceros, but he's using the word ox to say, this is, you know, the ox is a representation of awakened mind, and so you've got this empty circle in this actual ox sitting in it. So it's the present, it's ultimate reality, the entire world with this oxidant, in the same way that in our experience of awakened mind, and the world is what Suzuki Roshi would call big eye. It's not that things disappear or we have no perception of things, that we have no emotions, we have no desires, but they are all part of this complete world. Anyway, so I've gotten off on a tangent. So Yangguan is telling the attendant, okay, well, show me that. Show me that. Respond to this situation. The monk can't do anything at all. And Yuanwu has helped us out a little bit by saying that there are a number of subsequent teachers whose comments were in the margins of the book when it's, if you read the Chinese version. And each of these subsequent teachers alternates. One will make a response to bring me the rhinoceros, respond for the attendant. This is what I would have said. And then the next teacher will say, will take Yangguan's place and will say, well, no, that's not good. Because to avoid getting stuck in this thinking about what ultimate reality is, trying not to let it become some reified and therefore fake version of what reality is. And then Yuan Wu himself comes in and adds his two cents to what those two people said. So here we go. The attendant said, "The fan is broken. Still, this is talk about ordinary reality between father and son. They're just talking about a fan." The master says, "If the fan is broken, then bring me back the rhinoceros." This is going into the weeds with his whole body in a relationship with an adopted child. The attendant had no reply. After all, he had hit upon the true by way of the false. He'd been silent. He didn't have to say anything. It's just that he himself didn't know he had it. And Toza said on his behalf, "I'm not refusing to bring it out, but I'm afraid the horn on the head will be imperfect." Yuan Wu says, "Well, I say he can repair it. He can repair it because it is an expression of big eye. It is just a part of, even if the fan is broken, it is a part of this complete big eye that you see with big mind." And Shui Do brought this up and said, "Well, I want the imperfect one." He wants to see the broken fan. He wants to see, even if the monk says something stupid, but says it in a responsive way, he doesn't have to be right. He has to make a sincere response from the open mind, from big mind, which will be in order to respond. So Shui Do says, "I want this imperfect horn." Yuan Yu says, "Well, I say this is a family heirloom." Yeah? So just trying from big mind in a sincere way is itself a precious response. It is precisely the expression of big mind. Shishuang said, "If I give it back to you, Master, then I won't have it." Yuan Yu says, I say he avoids it through face to face. There they are meeting face to face. Nothing is lost. This face-to-face encounter is itself, right here, big eye, the two of them face-to-face sharing this reality right now. And Shui Do said, "Well, the bull is still there, or the ox is still there, since the ultimate reality is always there, no matter what happens with it. It is a part of this world, this life, our life." And to "the bull is still there," Yuan Wu says, "I say a clear eye is hard to fool." And Ba Fu said, "Yeah, Master's old, better ask someone else." And I say, "Much indebtedness leads to deep resentment," and so on. They're worth reading because they are helpful in understanding this point, this alternation between views of the specific and then the all-inclusive big mind, this expressions of big mind, even mistaken, confused expressions of big mind are themselves big mind. So the question is, when you work on this, the question is, Yongguan says, "Well, bring me the rhinoceros fan." So I have to ask you, the attendant couldn't say anything. If you were the attendant, what would you have said? What would you have done? How would you have responded? You've heard the examples from all these different temperatures. That's really good. Fun too.
Play, bodhisattvas.
Play, come on.
Because this is play.
Yeah,
too.
They're just having, the koans are fun. Mm-hmm. Yes?
I'm worried about the one.
Mm-hmm. Eve?
I think the horn should stay on the rhinoceros.
Too late. No, it is still. It is on the rhinoceros, right? The fan is still, the rhinoceros horn fan is still part of the rhinoceros. So that would work.
And if anyone online wants to share, feel free to raise your hand.
Yeah, Serena.
I was thinking that maybe bringing the rhinoceros into the room might block the sun. have a cooling effect without carving away any more of its horn.
How would you bring him into the room?
Well, they said it's still there, so you can bring it in. You bring it in, and then because there, it was like the autumn sunshine, right? And he's hot, so you put the rhinoceros in the way to catch to block the sun, and then the fan isn't needed anymore.
Josh?
I would say I don't need a fan, though. Winds come through the window pretty nice.
Did you feel the breeze? Yeah.
Well,
I have a question about, aren't oxen castrated?
Yes.
Because that's why when we talk about bulls, so the difference between bulls and oxen or oxen are castrated.
Yeah, but the character for bull and ox are the same. Or the character that Yuan Wu used can mean either bull or ox.
But if ox is a symbol of enlightenment, I mean, does that have something to do with it being castrated?
I don't think so. I think, you know, he's referring mostly, I think, to a very, very old series of paintings, the ox hunting series of paintings in which a farm boy the ox is disappeared and the farm boy is sent out to find him, and he looks for it, and he gets a glimpse, he finally gets him, sees him entirely, then he climbs on his back and rides it home, and he's playing the flute, and then finally there's a big and so sign of emptiness. So I don't know. I know one thing from having worked on my great uncle's farm, that you don't go looking for the bull.
No.
Don't mess with the bull.
But I'll
online.
Yes. Dennis.
Thank you. I'd bring the fan, the broken fan. What struck me about it was the word broken as relative, and bring me the rhinoceros as the absolute or the ultimate. But the broken is part of the whole reality.
Yeah.
So you'd be bringing him the rhinoceros.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think it's interesting that there's a play of associating Yangguan with rhinoceros and the attendant and his failure to answer. Even that is itself the rhinoceros, but associating him with the fan and the broken fan,
yes.
It works that way. But I like your answer, and so would Yuan Wu, because he has said, if I were the attendant, when I was told to bring the rhinoceros fan, whatever feathers, reeds, bamboo, silks, or yak hair came to hand, I'd bring them forth and give him the handle. And I think that's good. I think I'd even go beyond that and say, well, why does the, responding to the situation, what does the master need when he's asked for the fan? Does he just want to see this beautiful carved fan? Does he want to see the painting that might be on the fan itself? Does he want to look at the elaborate carving on the handle and the polished, textured horn? Or is he hot? And he just wants to cool down. So I would have brought the fan with another fan that would work, or have just asked, the fan is broken. Do you want me to bring you the pieces, and do you want me to bring you another fan? But that would have, your answer would have been, I think, there have been a lot of very good answers that I think would, None of those distinguished Zen teachers whose notes are in the margins would have complained about those answers. I love it.
And Vicky has one too, huh?
Where is she? Vicky.
Good morning. I mean, I would hope after thinking about it as you were reading and then asked us what we would do, that I would also bring the broken fan. But while I was thinking about that, I'm like, I would actually be stuck, like I often am, when I'm presented with something uncomfortable. And then I thought a little more and just about that interaction where the master, and like, what is he really asking for? Is it really hot and he needs to be cool? Or I think many teachers are just initiating some kind of response, you know, some activity. Because really, what can we do? Everything is done in big mind. Everything is taken care of. So why even interact? And then I thought about, you know, just bring him tea. Maybe if I was in a halfway easy spot, I would have just, if I knew the fan was broken, maybe I would have done something and maybe just offer something, even if it wasn't what was asked for. You know, what I work on is just some kind of response instead of that frozen small space, which often happens, you know, something uncomfortable happens in a situation. And I have to say my response often now still is just hesitation. And maybe I cover that up with, I'm just trying to read the room or the interaction. But I have to say right now, I often just kind of freeze and it doesn't feel good. And then maybe a response comes after the fact, but it feels, when I judge it, it feels like that response was too late. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, but thank you. It's still making me consider so many different things.
Something you said about maybe the attendance being tested is something that you can consider reading this. What if it is the master, Yungguan's fan, after all? He might very well know that it's already broken. So he's saying, well, bring me the fan. The attendant knows he's asking for this broken. What is he supposed to do? He knows he's being tested. So what is his response going to be then? And that just ramps it all up even more. He should
take these broken wings and learn to fly. We're all broken. Should we not bring ourselves to practice?
Yeah. Okay. Ox fan fly. Yeah. Okay.
Something, you know, came up for me when I was sitting, and I thought it was unconnected, but it's not. And now, you know, because I'm sitting and I'm fine and I'm healthy and I have a roof over my head and I'm safe, and I know that other people aren't. And, you know, I know that there's suffering. And, you know, I know that there's brokenness, and I mean, think about the brokenness. And you know, responding, I mean, I feel like you're giving us permission to respond however we can. I mean, we can't fix the whole thing, but, you know, in the immediate context, you know, we decide what we can do, whether it's bringing the master a broken fan or asking him if he really wants to be cooled down or whatever it is. But and I think, you know, you're talking about the broken wings and learning to fly. I mean, Leonard Cohen's music to me, a lot of, you know, his songs resonate with that. I mean, the brokenness, the lack, the crack that lets the light in, and how to sing Hallelujah in a broken world.
Yeah, I think that a number of you've talked about this, what kind of response we give. I mean, the problem, the attendance problem is he's thinking, he's locked up in himself, right? Am I going to be embarrassed? What am I supposed to do? Am I going to get it right? Am I going to make the correct response? And this is, the Cohen is calling you to open up, to be face to face with Yungguan and respond to what Yungguan needs, which may be he wants to see the polished handle of the broken fan. You may want to see the painting on the fan, but maybe he's just hot. So you have to bring a glass of water or ask, are you hot? Do you want some water? Do you want me to bring you another fan, or do you just want to look at the fan?
Yeah, even if you can't fix the fan.
Yeah.
Is the long silence in the text, or did you add the long silence with the thought that the attendant is embarrassed? The reason I ask is that for me it all depends on the delivery in the moment, right? If the teacher's immediate answer is bring me the rhinoceros, then it sounds like an invitation to do improv, right? And it's like the rhinoceros is right behind you, or something like that, or the rhinoceros is broken too. Or how many times do I have to tell you that the rhinoceros band is broken?
I look at it as more, you know, yes. One of the things about the Cohen stories is they seem deceptively concrete in a way and not abstract, but they leave out all sorts of details that you would, in an ordinary story, you would expect to have. So I read it as Yang Guan is trying to be compassionate, and he's giving him a second chance, and he's giving him a hint on how he might respond. Bring me the rhinoceros. Just come back to this moment. Respond to this moment.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's given him a chance to collect himself and respond. That's why he gave a pause and then said, gave him a hint. Bring the rhinoceros then. Respond this way. Respond not out of a sense of vulnerability and fear of embarrassment or shame or failure, but respond to a need.
It seems like we're not asked by to be playing, perfect. Right? Compassion by playing. He's like, his answer is, the bring me the rhinoceros is so playful.
Mm. Yeah. Mm.
It seems to be tender and playful.
Mm. Anyway, I'll just say one more thing and then I'll go away. You know, there are different strains in Zen of emphasis upon this concrete reality as the expression of the reality of the entire world. Whereas others, this emphasis on oneness and emptiness. The Book of Serenity has more of a Soto school emphasis on working with the fan, being not a symbol of conventional reality versus the absolute reality. It is the performance, the concrete performance, right now, right here in this situation of what is fundamentally real. And so I recommend spending time with the words, right? It's fun. Anyway,
there's another hand. Is that your cursor?
Oh, that is the cursor.
Cursor. Okay.
Time for one more, maybe, if anyone has anything.
Oh, I think maybe that this is a good time to end.
Let's end then.
Yeah, but I would just want to thank you as well for offering this really wonderful teaching and encouraging us to swim in the Book of Serenity.
Mm-hmm. So, four vows.
Mm-hmm. Beings are numberless, and we vow to free them. Delusions are inexhaustible, we vow to cut through them. Dharma gates are boundless, we vow to enter them. Buddha's ways unsurpassable, we vow to realize it. Beings are numberless, we vow to free them. Delusions are inexhaustible, we vow to cut through them. Dharma gates are boundless, we vow to enter them. Buddha's ways unsurpassable, we vow to realize it. Beings are numberless, we vow to free them. Illusions are inexhaustible. We vow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable. We vow to realize it.